Rolling. But kind of like I was saying yesterday, if y'all don't know what yesterday was for me, but yesterday was the first day we did the day one of the strength cycle with the bar muscle ups. And I was pretty much telling Cody that I had a lot of fun coaching it, but also you got to see people like that are super close to getting that bar muscle up that just haven't had the time to actually like maybe practice it in a workout or something. So like in 4 weeks, I can definitely see them getting one. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Like the wheels are starting to turn?
I think so. Because like yesterday, like most people was really just dialing in the jump to hollow, I felt like. Like that was the...
Did some people have a hard time with that?
I think so. But I think it's... Once they understand the jump to hollow though, everything else kind of clicks, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But I feel like once they got to understand that first.
Well, that's like the... With a bar muscle, it's like a domino effect where each piece is critical to the next piece. Mm-hmm. And that jump to hollow is a... Most people have never done that before. True. So it's kind of like you're... Most people just don't jump and like go into a hollow body position. Normally, you're kind of jumping into like an arch position, right? Yeah. And so it's kind of like the opposite of what you've always been kind of programmed to do when you jump to a bar. And so jumping on that bar in that hollow body position, catching with that... knuckles on top of the bar, and then learning how to float through the bar. And then the second step, I think, was definitely the most difficult, is once they get that knee kind of tucked position, mm-hmm. to actually drive their hips to the bar.
Yeah.
Is the hardest.
Because that was, like, the next step for, like, the people that already had the jump to hollow yesterday. For instance, like, somebody like Bryce, who, like, went to the bar muscle-up thing that we did.
Has he gotten one before?
He hasn't gotten one yet, I don't think. But I don't think he's tried, you know? Like, he went to the bar muscle-up camp we did that weekend, mm-hmm. and that was, like, the extent of, I think, like, okay. of trying. So yesterday, like, he already had the jump to hollow. It was more of him, like, trying to understand of... how to get his knees to the bar, but also like how does he extend his hips after that point, mm-hmm. right?
That's always the hardest part for people.
For sure. Usually. And I always find if they can dial that in, I can get you a bar muscle up. If you can shoot your hips to the bar, that's the easiest thing for me, I think. I think that's the easiest way for me to like be like, okay, I know for sure I can get you a bar muscle up.
So do you feel you're gonna have some people that will get their first one?
I think so. I think this is gonna be a lot of fun for some people, for sure. And then even for people that already have it, like for instance, like Taylor Butler, like he does singles all the time with bar mm-hmm. muscle ups. So like his thing was like trying to do string two together yesterday. Okay. So like he would do his jump to hollows, he would do his hip shoots, and then he would try to string two together.
Okay.
Right? So I think it's gonna be good for a lot of people.
Did some people who already have a bar muscle up feel like it kind of cleaned their form up a little bit?
Yeah. Like I know, like for instance, like a Chris Eisen, like he kind of just muscles his way up there mm-hmm. a lot of times. So really tried to make him like almost take that step back and like really dial in everything a little bit. I think it would be really good for people like that though. Or like people like maybe like a Crystal or somebody like that that has them, but they definitely have room for improvement.
Refine.
You know? Or people with like that super hard chicken wing. I think it'd be a good time for them to maybe like get that out of there also.
Okay. Maybe, and it's always one of those things where we're in a class setting, it's really hard to go into a lot of depth mm-hmm. with that movement because it is complicated and you have a lot of variations to that movement where, you know, if you have a class of 15 people, maybe 3 people in the class are doing bar muscle ups. And so you don't want to sit there and break down a bar muscle up for people who are only 3 who are doing it, compared to other people who either A, don't currently have the capacity to do it, or C, they could care less about having the capacity sure. to do it. So it's really hard to spend that much time in detail about it. So that was my thinking when programming it, was having the opportunity to spend more quality time on that one individual movement.
And I thought one of the more cool things is they probably don't know this, but normally a lot of people that would just be like, I don't have to get a bar muscle up. I don't need to do that.
Oh, you saw some
or
interest?
Do anything. You saw a lot of people jumping into some hollows yesterday mm-hmm. and like trying to get into that arch and like try to do some hip shoots. So
okay.
I think that was like a good opportunity for them to maybe like step out a little bit and maybe try some okay. things they haven't done before. So right. I'm excited to see who maybe ventures out and gets out of their little bubble a little bit.
Maybe somebody you didn't think was going to try to
do one. Yeah, I'm not going to call anybody yet, but I think there's going to be some people that surprise themselves, for sure.
Okay. Well, random question of the day. I'm going to time you for this.
Oh, boy.
Random, because anytime me and Kel on our podcast together, there's always at least a small slither of sports talk here.
Okay. All right, we got it.
It's a trivia question, though. You have 30 seconds.
Oh, trivia question? Okay.
You have 30 seconds. The name. Right. Technically, I guess you could technically say there's five teams.
Five?
But in my head, there's four teams who have a traditional star in their logo.
A traditional star?
Traditional star in their logo. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to compile those four teams. Three, two, one, go.
I mean, obviously Dallas. We're going Dallas off the bat. All right. I don't know. Like, this is just football, right?
Just football.
Just football? Jets, no. Bills, no. Vikings, no. Bucks, no.
You only got one right now.
One? Yeah, I don't know if I'm 15 seconds in. To be honest.
I'll give you 60 seconds.
Niners, no. Steelers? Steelers, one? No.
I will give you Steelers. Steelers technically, it's not a 5-point star, but it's kind of a star. So technically, we have five.
Kind of. Ravens, no. Bengals, no. Chargers, no.
30 seconds.
Oakland, no.
Come on now. You know somebody's screaming in the...
I don't think I'm going to get this at all. I don't think I'm going to get
20 close. Seconds. You still got three left.
Shit, dude. I'm doing terrible.
Come on, bro.
15 Texans? seconds. Texans? Texans, okay.
That's three. You got two more. 10 seconds.
I ain't going to get it, dog. No way.
Come on.
Miami, no.
Five.
Jacksonville, no.
Three. Two, one. Oh, I'm so disappointed in you, Cal.
Where were they? I gotta know.
The other two were the Titans.
Titans? Tennessee.
Which that one's hard because it's not their
prevalent. It's like in the middle of the logo.
It's around the T.
Okay, yeah.
And then you're gonna kick yourself in the ass for this one a little bit. The Patriots.
Patriots. They got like the bird, right?
He looks like a bird, but his hat has a star on it.
Does it have a star on it? Oh, okay. All right. You got me right there.
Come on.
That was a good one. That was a good one, though.
I saw that one the other day. I was like, I got to ask a couple questions on the podcast.
So me and Sydney did something like that for a while when it was going through Instagram where it was kind of like the trend where the boyfriend or the husband had like all the team names and you like show it to your girlfriend and they have to name
the logos.
And that was pretty fun. If you haven't done that before, you should definitely
Did Sydney know them all?
No, but she came up with some... Crazy names. Some off the wall names.
Katie's pretty good at it. I would probably venture to say, out of all the NFL, those 32 NFL teams, right? She could probably name 20 plus.
Oh, that's good. That's probably. Really good.
I wouldn't say guarantee 20 plus, but I feel pretty confident she could name 20.
I don't know. Sydney could definitely.
You have to say the city and the team name?
So, as long as she gave me one of the two. So,
you counted it?
Like, let's say it was Baltimore Ravens. As long as she gave me Baltimore or if she gave me Ravens, I was okay with it.
So, I feel pretty confident she would know the team name, maybe not the city.
Well, that was Sydney. Sydney knew the name, but the city was hard for her to get.
Yeah, that's
right?
I feel like it's
Like, she wouldn't have known, like, Baltimore Ravens. Like, she just knows it as Ravens, right? Or she actually knows the Bengals, but that's just because Joe Burrow is over there. That was a good one. That wasn't too bad.
All right, so we just kind of throwing off the cuff here, Kel.
We're going off the dome today, so we're just gonna see where this goes, and hopefully it goes somewhere productive.
Well, it seemed at least the feedback that I got from a lot of people on the solo podcast, and kind of played off of Haley's comment or question about programming. It seemed like most people. Enjoyed that section of the podcast.
I enjoy that. I enjoy talking about programming. So
I don't know if potentially we're going to talk about that more in detail today or we can kind of like spin off some of those
topics. Well, Haley's question was, if I remember correctly, it was like, how long ahead of time do you plan? Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to program like a week, right?
Sure.
And that was one more question about it?
I guess maybe a little bit in the method to the madness.
That's what it was. Method to the madness.
I guess so. a lot of unpacking that question, which was probably a good 5+ minutes in that podcast of me breaking things down, which you also could go into more detail and depth about those things. And I don't know if we may want to spend some time on that today, maybe, potentially. It's your call. So I guess, and I wish I kind of addressed that in the last podcast as well, as like, how far advanced do we program? Now, the strength cycles are already kind of programmed for the individual month itself. Mm-hmm. So every month towards the back end of that individual month, we start to program the next month's strength cycle based off kind of what we've done the past previous two roughly strength cycles, where usually in our heads, we try to go with some type of squatting pattern of some kind. I guess I'm not going to go into detail just yet, but some type of squatting pattern, some type of pressing pattern is kind of the staples. Ideally, some type of pulling pattern, and then some type of skill of some sort. It's kind of the general breakdown that we usually, if you could say like the most basic of the basic, is kind of how we go about choosing the individual movements to start off with.
Yeah, like that's like super generalized. Like, what do you want to do with it?
Very, very generalized, yeah. Right? Now, going into more depth of that can get really hairy and very into the weeds. So like, for instance, taking the example of the squatting pattern, you could go as basic of front squat, back squat, overhead squat. If you're, we don't really program overhead squats a whole lot, but
those are like your three main squats.
That'd be like in CrossFit's definition, the three main squats that you would kind of go with. Right. And we'll go through particular cycles of going more traditional strength routes of back squatting and front squatting, just like the last previous strength cycle we worked up to a heavy three, which is a very traditional type of strength cycle.
Old schooling.
But then from there, do you want to include tempos or holds, or do you just want it to be straight explosive work where you're just trying to build that type 1 muscle fiber and build strength with that? From there, if we want to do more of a cluster style set, do we want to, how much time duration of rest do we want between these two movements? Do we want to keep it purely just the squat movement? Do we want to pair with another leg movement to get more of accessory type movement kind of in with that?
Stylish.
Do we want to be a bilateral movement? Do we want to be a unilateral movement where it's a lunge or a Bulgarian split squat or a drop reverse lunge?
And now we're losing people.
So I mean, you kind of see where how many different. What's that diagram called where you basically have the main circle and you have things kind of coming off the circle?
What?
You know, like in science class, you have like a circle and you draw like squat.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then you'd have like a line off of that and be like Bulgarian split squat.
Okay.
Right? Or you could say like squat, bilateral, unilateral, and then off the bilateral, you could say like front squat, back squat.
Like it's a little family tree type stuff.
Exactly. Right? I forgot exactly the name of the diagram. But you can kind of see like how crazy we can go with things if we really want to. And sometimes we'll go further into those weeds and sometimes we'll bring it back to very basics.
Sure.
Right. So in my opinion, I think I'm leaning towards going back to a very just basic back squat next season cycle in November. Not a guarantee, but because right now we're doing front squats. We're kind of going to cyclo squats. The cyclo squats are different because of the fact of how much anterior load is placed in the body because of the angle of the feet being an elevated surface, so it puts more emphasis on the quads. But to still get some glute and groin work, we introduce the Cossack squat to help balance out some of that, so we're not completely just doing all quad dominant stuff.
Funny story about that is, we had somebody in the class never done cyclo squats before, right? Or they had done them before, but not with like a front rack, like a front squat. And then they do their front squats and they go to their goblet Cossack squats and they get they get like 3 and 3 in, drop the kettlebell, walk to the water fountain, hamstrings start cramping to the water fountain. And I'm not gonna put you out there.
Well, I'm sure the class knows who it is.
Everybody knows who it is if you come in the afternoon. But anyway, literally like cramps up at the water fountain and then he walks up to me and goes, "Dude, you didn't tell me the Cossack squats were going to be the worst part of this." And I was like, well, I mean, it's just like, he was like, "Dude, my groin and my hamstrings." And I was like, well, I mean, that's what it's for, you know?
I think
a lot of people look past the Cossack squats as like the tough part.
Well, it doesn't look as intimidating as like a cyclist front squat would be. And Cossacks, when especially done properly, are extremely good movement because they get you out of that different plane. Because everything we do is more like in that sagittal plane where it's just basically forward and backward, right? We don't really do anything side to side. So it's a great way to work through a different plane of motion. And it's one of those movements where you're also kind of working on flexibility at the same time as working on strength. And that's really the, hello, Jennifer. Jennifer's disrupting our podcast currently as we speak.
Jennifer, don't forget your oatmeal. I
know. Her 3-bite oatmeal that she has.
I was waiting
to
three.
So the biggest thing with the Cossack squat that I've seen, at least the first week was it, is that people were definitely stopping short of the range of motion they're probably able to achieve. And the biggest thing I would say, especially with that individual movement, is push the range of motion as far as you feel like you can in a safe position. And don't load that position unless you feel comfortable with it, right? If you feel like it's a really hard movement to get in and out of, then don't also don't load it. But don't load it just for sake of loading it and doing partial range of motion.
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I preached to my class before I left and went to Austin. It was kind of like, I would rather you body weight this for the first mm-hmm. week or 2 weeks, right? And really like get full range of motion and like keep your chest up and hit everything
yeah.
rather than you grab like a 35 pound kettlebell and like you're doing half reps going all the way down, you know, or your chest is falling all the way towards your toes and yeah. you just look like shit, you know?
Well, that could really apply for any movement in general.
Sure. Absolutely. Right?
Like
yeah, for sure.
A back squat, a push up.
Front squat, that, I mean, you can name it anything really.
But more so, especially with the Cossack squat, because it is, in any movement to a degree, going through a four-range motion is technically like a stretch, I guess, per se. But particularly with that movement, for some reason, we see a lot of people definitely cutting that short. So if you are listening to this and you are in that cycle of doing the Cossack squats, please try to get through a deeper range of motion as best you can. Now, obviously, don't push it so far where obviously you're going to injure yourself.
Yeah.
You want to push it where it gets uncomfortable. And then if you can load that position, great. But if you're not quite there, then don't load
that
position
just yet.
So and that's just like one example of many that you could go with when it comes to making a general strength cycle. But like I said, kind of resorting the very first part of the strength cycle, that's kind of the general play that we go with is some type of squat pattern, some type of pulling pattern, pulling from the floor and or pull like pull ups, right? Or like a row or some kind. Some type of pressing pattern, whether it be a vertical press, horizontal press, or downward press. And then you usually some type of skill. It's lately, the past probably couple months,
we've been throwing a skill in there for y'all.
Like, I think we start off with maybe handstand walk, that's rope climb, now we're on bar muscle up.
Now we're on bar muscle up, so.
And that's an opportunity. And the reason why I kind of included a skill piece with that, it gave people an opportunity to do work on a, so multiple reasons why. So working on a particular skill, not in a WOD environment, not in a workout environment.
We actually have time to actually learn something.
Well, it gives the coach a little bit more ample time to explain the movement in more detail that he didn't necessarily have time in a class where we talked about the bar muscle up.
Sure.
Two, it gives people an opportunity to actually practice, not under stress, because they're not going to try it in a workout.
Your heart rate's low enough to where you can actually focus on it.
Yeah. And then, like I said, third, and then also it gives you plenty of ample time of rest and recovery between sets to where you don't feel like you're rushing,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I thought something good to include, but at the same time, you do have some people who either A, don't have the prerequisite strength, or B, don't have the interest in it. So you still have to challenge them in some degree.
Sure.
And that's why doing like the pull-up negatives yesterday were a good option for those people who don't have the prerequisite strength or just don't have the wherewithal to want to do it. And so that's kind of what we've been going there. And then usually for like a Thursday piece, we'll kind of see what we have left over. We kind of been trading off between like either like core and legs or like arms or upper body, stuff like that. It's for, I guess you move more of a traditional Globo gym
like bodybuilding type style workout
piece. And that kind of goes a little bit more of our flow for Thursday type workouts. So, I mean, there's thousands of different ways that you can go about doing a particular strength cycle, but that's, and obviously,
in all the different combinations you can
well, and like, if you want, how, what kind of loads, what kind of percentage you want to do, the higher volume reps, you want to do lower volume reps, you want to do high volume sets, you want to do low volume sets, how much rest do you want to have between. There's a lot of ways to go about doing it, right? It really just kind of depends on where we're trying to push the needle at that particular time.
Sure.
It's really the main thing. And the past couple strength cycles hasn't been too hardcore on building like a lot of a crap load of absolute strength. We have definitely always a component of that, but it's been a little bit more dialing back the heavy loads and going to more
lighter
moderate volume reps to keep you guys healthy and keep the tendons healthy and still work on some hypertrophy to a degree. And then
it's also really good just building that base though. Like,
well,
that literally found you're just building a really good foundation at this point. And like you said, you wanted to kind of maybe go towards like a 3 rep max back squat after this mm-hmm. or whatever you were saying earlier. It's kind of like, well, now you built that foundation, so you should feel really good and strong, I guess, going into that back squat cycle, right?
Well, I think a lot of people think they, for instance, say you want to give a heavier back squat, think that you, all you should be doing is heavy back squatting. Mm-hmm. And that is partially true.
Yeah,
you do have to lift heavier loads on a consistent basis. But in a class setting, there's almost so much time you can delegate here, right? And with that being said, you guys don't have, we're not having 2 hour classes, 90 minute classes. We have 60 minutes. And we just can't always just throw a shitload of weight on our back and squat it all the time, right? It's not the most safe thing to do. It's not the smart thing to do in the long run. We can go through waves of it and then come and then take time away from it. And yes, when you maybe come back to lifting heavier back squats, at first it's probably going to feel a little bit heavier.
Just like a week or two, yeah.
Your central nervous system, your midline is probably not used to having those kind of loads in your back. But because you've gone through cycles of more accessory type movements, that you're in a stronger position in the long run to keep doing it for longer periods of time. But also because of the fact that we've done these other accessory movements, you have these other muscle groups that are actually stronger. Now you just have to go back and rebuild the movement pattern back again with heavier loads.
Sure.
And so if we go through a couple cycles of that, then the back squats should increase over time.
Feel that.
But it's like, okay, you do have to take the long road to kind of get there. You just can't take the temporary short term of 32 PR on my back squat in this 4 week cycle. And let's just keep repeating that every 4 weeks
and try to
PR back squat, PR back squat. And you might see some general progress to start, but eventually you're going to plateau or you're going to injure yourself because you're constantly hammering these heavy back squats all the time. Yeah. And so that's kind of the idea when it comes to the strength work, right? And I know some people can gloss over the strengthness. I know we did maybe a whole podcast on not.
I feel like people have been doing better with it, though.
Yeah, for the most part. I think
at least
the end of the day.
In the afternoon. Like, I feel like more people are, like, willing to maybe push the strength portion, right? I don't know. I feel like it was a problem there for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's definitely gotten way better.
But the mindset is like, the WOD is the only thing that matters for some people, right?
But I think that was the big thing, is, like, actually getting people to realize, like, the WOD shouldn't be like the be all everything, like, right? Like, you should be spending, like, I feel like, equal, I guess, attention on both the strength and the WOD problem.
Well, here's the deal, is I understand for a lot of people that the workout, because it is for time and you do have a score and it's important to you.
And that's what everybody looks at, right?
That, and people, that's what people talk about, is naturally you want to reserve or not wear yourself out for the workout,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's important to you to have a good score,
sure,
or whatever it may be. And there's kind of two ways I'll kind of go about that. Is one, at the end of the day, you're not a professional athlete and you're not getting paid to do this. And you started the whole entire process because you're either trying to look better, feel better, and do this for the long run, right? And taking care of your strength is going to help out in all those areas of looking better, feeling better, and performing better as well.
Sure.
And if you're constantly slacking on your strength pieces, you're going to have a harder time helping out with those other areas as mm-hmm. well, right? Yes, doing WADs will help out those areas too, but strength is also a humongous aspect of that. And even performance is important to you. Well, working on strength is also going to help performance.
I was about to say, like, think about this, is like, you work on strength, for one, like, you're going to be stronger in a WOD. You're probably going to be able to hold bigger sets in a WOD. Like,
well, if you're doing thrusters at 95 pounds and thrusters demolish you, well, thrusters are going to be a hell of a lot easier if your front squat's heavier than 185.
Sure, yeah.
If you can front squat 245, the thrusters are going to feel a little bit easier now.
Astronomically.
Right? Because you got to think, percentage of what my front squat now is less at 95 pounds than it was at a 95 pound bar at 245 than it is at 95 pounds at 185 pounds. And so even if performance isn't still important to you, you still need to do it for looking better and feeling better and also improving range of motion. And then, so I guess that's kind of the other road I'm going to go down, is talking about performance as well. But that's why we don't want you guys to, it doesn't mean you have to, like, crush yourself in the strength piece.
No.
I'm not saying that, but either A, not doing the strength piece at all because you're trying to reserve yourself, or B, you're basically going through the motions to save yourself for
like,
the workout.
You're throwing a 10 on the bar and you're just kind of moving through the motions
and
stuff.
Then you're not doing yourself any service.
Absolutely.
Right? And so we've already kind of done a whole genre of that. I think we've done a pretty good job of talking about that and getting that information out to people. And so I always look forward to the strength pieces myself, because that's because I know the benefits of doing that. And I think people have done a better job, like I said, of actually putting forth the effort. And like we've said 100 times as well, is progressively overloading that from week to week, because we go through the month cycles of strength. And the reason why we do that, we don't constantly change the strength cycles up from like every week, Monday to the next Monday. And so it allows you guys to do progressive load to get stronger. Because that is the main principle of strength, is progressive overload.
If you don't take anything from this, take this.
And what, you know, if you're trying to say what the hell is progressive overload, it's just a very fancy term for saying you're dialing up the intensity one notch each week, essentially, where it's not you're stretching yourself, but if I'm doing the cyclist front squat and I did 8 reps at 135 pounds, well, next week we're doing 6 reps. Obviously, I'm looking to increase upon 135 pounds, sure, to like 145, 155 pounds. And I'm going to dial up that intensity each week, because for your body to make an adaptive change, it has to be stressed enough to do so.
Exactly.
Without enough stress, the body has no reason to change. And it's just like that with nutrition or anything else, that you have to stress it enough, not too much, but enough to make some type of adaptation to occur. And that's why we always stress to you guys to track, especially if you're going to track one thing, at least track the strength from week to week. And that way you know what to shoot for. And it gives you motivation as well. And you'll,
well, it gives you something to look forward to.
Well, I think sometimes where people can kind of get wrapped up in the WOD and like scores and other people's time sometimes. But when it comes to strength, it's you against you, especially.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you did the diamond push-ups and you did 30 total reps, I did 10 each time with the diamond push-ups, my goal is to get 31 this week.
Sure.
So get one more than I did the week prior. Right? And that's a me versus me process.
A lot of times. I think they just get complacent. Like, let's say they did 10 and let's say they did, let's just go with that, right? Say they did 10 push-ups every time. And next week, I guarantee you, there's some people that are probably going to try and do 10 push-ups again, right? And I don't think it's that they don't want to do better. I think they just get comfortable and they're just like, all right, this is just where it is. This is where I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you feel that way or not, but...
Sometimes. And I don't...
Because as soon as I feel like I push that person or like, mm-hmm, let's try to get 12, they get 12 and then I don't have to tell them ever again. It's like they get 12, 14, 15. Yeah. And like they just know what to do at that point in time.
And I don't know where... It's kind of one of those things, maybe it's just kind of as a coach, you maybe kind of ask the mindset. And maybe they just don't know they're doing it.
Sure, yeah.
It's just kind of autopilot, and they're like, okay, I did 10 last time, I'll just do 10 this time. Right? And
I think kind that's of, what, probably what it is.
And it's just checking the box.
Yeah.
And because I'm, you know, sometimes I can go in the rabbit hole and overthink what maybe somebody else is feeling or thinking. Where, you know, maybe that individual person is like, well, if I strain too hard, I might injure myself, mm-hmm, or I might get too bulky, or whatever those things may be, right? But in all actuality, regardless of any of those things, like we kind of talked about not over-intensifying, but you still have to push yourself enough to a degree where for like on a 1 to 10 effort scale, I'm saying like an 8 or a 9, right? Like every once in a while you can go to that 10, but inevitably, regardless of what you do, if you push your body to the limits to a degree for a long enough period of time, yeah, the potential injury does occur from time to time, right? But it's either you do that or you're hurting because you don't do anything,
yeah,
right? And you kind of have to pick which one
you want. Pick which one you want,
right? And I think that's one thing that kind of, and I know we're kind of going a little bit of a side tangent right now, but that's one thing that always aggravates the piss out of me when it comes to people who don't work out because they're like, oh, you know, you're just gonna get yourself hurt working out, or you know, taking care of your fitness, or, and there is a partial truth where on a long enough continuum of a fitness journey, some nicks and bangs are gonna happen if you're being somewhat intentional with your workouts, where you're involving some intensity, things of that nature, where you're gonna get a little banged up here or there. The other flip side of that is, if you don't do anything, you're just going to wake up every morning in the bed and hurt because you haven't done anything either.
Sure.
So it's like you got to pick which one you want. At least I don't have to be on blood pressure medication and have actual health problems, right? Because I'm not taking care of my health. I'd rather have like a bum knee or a bum shoulder than have to take pills every single day because, sure, I'm not taking care of myself. And you kind of have to pick which one you want there. And so that is one thing that does aggravate me with general population of is that connotation of working out and things of that nature is what's, I just think it's
super common, like That's a super common thing, even with people just coming off the street and maybe just coming through the gym, like, mm-hmm. and just come for a meeting or something. I feel like that's maybe one of the top excuses for sure.
Yeah. And so it is a point of annoyance for me to a degree for sure. And so anyways, I guess it's kind of like our spiel of the strength section of the class, I guess. Now, when it comes to the chaos of a traditional why, right? There's definitely some moving pieces to that as well. Now, the thing is with...
I feel like this is where everything can go, like, sideways.
Well, when it comes to, like, a class setting, right? And I know I've maybe spoken on this before. Here's the deal is when it comes to, like, for instance, like, in a strength cycle, we maybe have a general goal we're working towards, per se, right? And that's a little bit easier to put down on paper and say, okay, you're at point A, you're trying to get to point B, right? When it comes to WADS, right, that's GPP, or general physical preparedness, essentially what you're doing. You're kind of touching these certain bases on a regular basis, right? But there's not, it's more so like you're just kind of covering what you need to cover.
Yeah.
But there's not necessarily a quote-unquote...
You don't have a goal in 8 weeks that you're working towards, right?
General direction, right? Like, it's kind of use the Fran example, right? Let's say I want to PR my Fran time. Okay. That is my goal. Well, a program to do that is going to look very much the same from week to week with gradual intensity over time.
Sure.
And that can be very monotonous and boring, but if that's your general goal, that's what we can work towards, right? And when we go to our WADS, I don't think that's where most people want to go.
You don't want
with.
To do the same.
Where every Monday we're doing a WAD that has thrusters and pull-ups, or thrusters and biking,
I feel
thrusters
like
and running.
A conditioning piece is way different than a strength piece. Like, for a strength piece, I can work myself up week to week, and, like, there's excitement, but, like, I don't know if I could get excited for, like, oh, I get to do 5 more thrusters this week in a workout, right? Like, that doesn't excite me.
Well, and that's kind of like where I'm kind of going with there is if we had certain directions when it comes to the actual goal of one individual piece of our workouts where we're trying to PR an individual type workout, right? You could even make up a random workout and say, okay, we're going to test this workout. We're going to do it 8 weeks from now, and we're going to retest and see. Well, you're going to have some, not just throwing shit at the wall, and I guess you could to a degree do that. Why? You're going to build some resiliency of doing that, right? Where, let's say it's a workout that has running and burpees and pull-ups, right? Mm-hmm. Where every Wednesday I could do a random workout that has burpees, running, and pull-ups,
sure.
right? Maybe some of the movements trickled in. And yeah, there's a good chance I might be able to PR that in 4, 6, 8 weeks, whatever it may be, right? Compared to having a little bit more of a systemized approach to that. But the argument that I make to that is when doing that, you're technically probably getting less fit.
Think so?
Because of the fact
just
that...
Just because you're not doing everything again? Like you're
exactly,
not
right?
Variety.
You're not touching on all these different standpoints, right? So,
like something else is lacking because you're doing it.
Exactly,
right?
Because you're spending so much time in this one individual bucket, the other buckets become less full. Because of it, right? And that's not what our general goal is as a general class programming, is to bring up like this one individual section, right?
That's a very good point.
And that's very individualized, right? It'd be different if you're doing an individualized program, right? Let's say we take like somebody like Nick, for example, where, you know, he's very good in these certain areas, but maybe like handstand pushups is something that he struggles with high volume reps. Well, his programming is going to be individualized to where we have very specific times of the week each week where we're particularly throwing out pieces to improve his handstand pushups in a higher work.
Like certain days are for those weaknesses.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Right. But that's individualized, right? Because that's what he needs for him to compete in the sport of CrossFit, right? But for, you know, let's say Sarah Margaret, she's got 3 kids. She's a mom, right? She has no desire to ever compete in her one day in her life. Why should she have to sit there and spend every Wednesday working on getting handstand pushups in a WAD, working on her handstand pushup capacity when
she gives no shit.
No shit's about that, right? It's like, okay, if we can spend more time working on general conclusive, broad conclusion to fitness. That's what's most
important. That's what's going to benefit the majority of
for her overall right? life goals, yeah. right? She doesn't really care about performing necessarily better in certain workouts, right? Her goal is to be generally physically fit for anything that life might throw at her.
Sure.
Right? It's the same concept when it comes to our WODs, where we're not trying to gear into one individual section or one particular piece to improve upon per se, mm-hmm. right? You take like the quarterfinal workout where I had like the rope climbs and deadlifts and pull-ups, right?
Sure.
That's a very grip capacity workout, right? Where you could write a 8-week program to work on grip capacity in WODs and then retest that workout and see how you improved, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, that's geared towards one individual
section. Always, so like I keep thinking, what keeps happening in my head is like the whole year we had like generalized fitness, right? And then there's always one time throughout the year that we kind of like structure our programming towards something, and it's always Murph, right?
Yeah.
And so like
that's one time
Murph would be like the one time in the year that like every
and
Tuesday and Friday,
well, and
that, we might do something like that, right?
The only caveat as to, I will say, because the only reason why I do that, the main reason why I do that, is more for safety.
Mm-hmm. Because we don't want a bunch of people coming over here and getting rapid.
Exactly.
Right?
The amount of volume that you're going to have to accumulate in that individual workout, if you're not somewhat trained to go into there and do that, and you try to do that thing RX and you're not, your body's not ready for that, that could be
that's
a dangerous thing. So it's really more for the safety of the gym.
And that's
it's
kind of another thing that goes into programming too. Like you're not like trying to just throw off these like crazy off the wall things, like because like you have to keep that in mind also as like the programmer and the gym owner.
Yeah. So when it comes to, now that we kind of got that out of the way, where we're not necessarily thinking about working towards one individual goal when it comes to the WODs and stuff, and we're talking more on the general broad exclusivity of touching certain things, have a broad inclusive program. Now we kind of go to the weeds of that, I guess, is kind of where I'm kind of going to go with the conversation. And, you know, the very foundation of that is making sure that we're hitting certain planes in a balanced way on each individual week. So we're, ideal world, we're hinging and squatting about 3 times per week.
Okay.
We're pushing and we're pulling twice a week. Doing some type of carry once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all a carry would essentially mean is going from point A to point B with the something object.
Some up,
right? So most people think of like a farmer's carry. It would also be like a lunge.
Could be
right?
a lunge, could be a sandbag. Could be
anything like that. And then, ideally, if possible, trying to take one movement and bring it from the floor to overhead. So you
okay.
snatch, clean jerk, something along those lines. It's kind of the general program. It's kind of the foundation of what we usually start off with, right? Where when we write up a week, we had to make sure that these things are all balanced. Because of the fact that that gives us the most general touch points, we're not just squatting all 1 week, we're not just all hinging 1 week,
sure.
right? Because then we start to create imbalances in those particular areas where if we're always pressing all the time, we go for 4 weeks and we pressed 12 times, we've only pulled 3 times, well.
And I always think it's funny because everybody's, sometimes they'll always be like, we've squatted 3 times this week, and I'm like, we haven't squatted 3 times. It might feel like you've squatted 3 times, but I promise you, you probably haven't squatted fucking 5 times.
Well,
right?
And the thing is as well where...
But and let's say you do happen to squat twice in a week or 3 times in a week, you're probably not doing heavy front squats
well,
the same
exactly
time all three of those days. Like, you might have, like, an air squat, maybe a goblet squat, and then, like, a back squat, right?
Well, and that's where I was going to kind of go
ball,
with
ball.
It.
Like, something
right.
like... subtle, like that's not going to cause a lot of like stress and damage, like it's super
yeah.
low impact.
Well, that's what I was going to kind of go with that is I think some people can hear the word squat and they're thinking we're back squatting or front squatting
mm-hmm.
3 times in 1 week or thrustering 3 times in 1 week. And so for instance, an example could be, let's say Monday you do back squats,
mm-hmm.
right? Let's say, or front squats in a workout. And Wednesday you do wall balls.
Sure.
And Thursday, we bodyweight lunge.
Okay.
That's 3 squats.
Yeah.
In a week. Right? We might not squat the rest of the week, right? Where Friday has no squatting pattern. Saturday has no squatting pattern. But you technically squat it 3 times that week.
Sure.
Right? And then same thing on a pulling pattern where we might do power cleans, right? Which is a hinging pattern because you're pulling from the floor. It's a hinging pattern. One day, you might dumbbell snatch on Friday, right? And you might kettlebell swing on Saturday, right? As an example of different hinging patterns that you could do, right? Deadlift being one of those as well. But essentially anything that's involved a little bit more in the posterior chain where you have to hinge over to pick up the object from the floor, right? That would be more of a hinge. I usually don't classify, it could be where you classify like a hang clean, like a hinge, but
sure.
To a degree, but it's like a partial hinge, right? But depending on how the week is programmed, sometimes hang can be.
Those can kind of like, I always find those, that's more of like a filler to me. Like that can be a filler movement if you
sure.
want it to be.
Yeah, kind of like.
That's a free for all guy.
Yeah. And so that's an opportunity. So that's what we kind of mean by the breakdown of like to a squat into a hinge pattern. It doesn't mean we're squatting heavy
sure.
per se, right? We might have like a heavy squat day in there. We might have just air squats in there another day.
But we're not going to make you do the same thing 3 times in a row.
Exactly,
right?
I think some people maybe hear that and run with that, right? And it's always funny as well where you have somebody come in, let's say it's a Wednesday, like, oh my God, can we quit doing so many presses? My freaking triceps are killing me. And then the next person comes in like, oh my God, can we quit doing pull-ups? My biceps are killing me.
And, or they'll talk about their legs, and I'm like, that's literally the whole opposite body part than the other person just said.
Exactly, right? They're like, oh, my legs are killing me. Can we quit doing so much lower body this week? And next person's like, we're doing upper body so much upper body this week. And so that's a general pattern that we kind of initiate things to go with, right? To make sure we're kind of balancing all those things. And even with the strength cycles that we talked about, like for instance, like even pressing in wads as well, where making sure you're pressing in the way of a vertical plane, you're pressing overhead, right? Which we do a lot of horizontal plane push-ups or some type of bench pressing variations.
Sure.
And then I also don't do as much compared to the other two, but like downward pressing with dips, right? I still try to include dips at least on a somewhat regular basis. It's just, what are the downward movement are you going to program
for
the pressing
movement? There's not a lot of downward pressing.
Right, we're going to get a bunch of decline benches in here and start
true.
Doing that, right? And so that's kind of how we think about balancing things out. And like obviously when it comes to like pull-ups, you have like a vertical pull, which is like pull-ups, you have more of a horizontal pull, like a row. And usually Thursdays or the strength pieces are ways to sort of balance out the
sure.
pulling patterns.
Like you're not going to like vertical pull 3 times. You might vertical pull once, and then you're also going to try to throw in a horizontal
I try to throw in a, out, if right? I have one vertical pull, I try to have a horizontal pull, at least program the week. And that's why we talk about Thursdays as being important to help kind
of a lot of times those
close
those
up the circle.
Right?
Yeah, close up the whole circle of the programming
sure.
for the week. And so that's the general broad like basis to kind of go with, right? Right. We're making sure we're at least touching on those bases, the very basic things of that. Now, when it comes to like actually programming that out, right? Like, and I kind of talked this a little bit in the last podcast of what is necessarily a great program and what's a fun program can sometimes not mesh well together.
Yeah. Well, that's like probably the hardest balance.
And it is, where you want people to enjoy the workouts they're doing. They are challenging, but they're not boring.
It's hard to make a really good workout not boring and like and try to make it have like that little pizzazz that like keeps it fun, you know, and keeps you wanting to come back.
Well, like I even said in the last one, I could program a 6 400s.
Sure.
The 2 minute rest week. That's still a really tough workout.
Absolutely.
Right? If you go out there and say, okay, you're going to hold a minute 45 splits or a minute 35 splits on these 400-meter runs.
That's going to be a tough workout.
That's going to start to hurt really bad.
But at the end of the day, like, who wants to pay a monthly membership when you come and
do a track
go
workout.
Run outside on a road where they could go do that in their neighborhood?
Chris
right?
Jones, if Chris Jones listens to podcasts.
Hey, he's probably like, let's do more runs.
Exactly. but you know where I'm getting at there. It's an effective
sure.
piece. But not a fun piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a little bit of that balance axe does come to play is writing up the structure of the workout to kind of fit within that. And also, what's a workout that's going to make sense in a class setting of 15,
like,
20 people?
Yeah.
25 people. Where there's been plenty of times where I've written up a workout, I'm like, this workout looks awesome, but it does not make
like
sense.
Old school, like beginning, probably when you opened, you were able to write whatever and whatever the heck you wanted. Right?
And this looks like a really like fun workout, awesome workout to do, but it's not feasible.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a feasible workout to program in class. Like,
the
one thing I always love to program, but it's just not feasible, is like a barbell bench and like bar muscle-ups or pull-ups.
True, yeah.
You cannot like program.
Phenomenal.
You can do it by yourself, but yeah. You can't do that in a class program, right? It's just not feasible where you have people doing bench press on barbells and then doing pull-ups on the rig.
Pull-ups, yeah.
It's just not going to work.
That'd be a good combination.
Yeah. And so this is kind of being one example of just because it's something that looks great on paper is not feasible in a class, true. Right? So,
and that's something I think probably a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah. So that's the very, 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 very basic things, right? And also... And you kind of maybe have noticed, I don't think I've had anybody, and I probably shouldn't say it out loud, but
oh, Lord.
Like we've been a little bit more biased towards the AMRAPs than we have been the four-time workouts.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's noticed that, though.
No, nobody's really noticed that so much. I hadn't heard any.
Now, you said
that.
It, though.
Now everybody's going to say it. I probably should have said it. But and the reasoning for that, it allows for also better structure of the classes as well.
You can, a coach can like time his actual like timeline out.
Yes. More. It makes it a lot, and the class flow structure works a whole lot better that way when we do have AMRAPs compared to when you have things for time, and you got somebody finishing in 12 minutes, you got somebody finishing in 17 minutes. Well, that's a 5-minute gap.
Where you're just sitting there waiting for one person.
Yeah, one person's finished up, and they're just kind of sitting around waiting around, or you have everybody finishing around 12, 13 minutes, you have one person lagging behind, that's 17 minutes. Well, whole class is now paused for one individual person to finish up those last 2 or 3 minutes.
We might not be able to stretch at the end of the class because of something like that, right?
Exactly, right. So it just involves a little bit more better structure because of that, right? But yes, that is another thing is like task priority versus time priority.
Sure.
Where, you know, task priority being, okay, I've given you this amount of work to do, 3 runs of time, 5 runs of time, that's a good thing for time. And that would be like a task priority workout. And time already being like AMRAP, like 17 minutes, 12 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it may be. So in CrossFit's methodology, you would want to have that as balanced as possible. Like I said, I've been definitely not balancing that as because of a general class setting. But I don't think that's like going to make or break somebody's fitness level.
But also, I think AMRAPs are probably everybody's. Like if everybody had to pick a style of CrossFit workout, AMRAPs are probably, in my opinion, probably everybody's favorite.
They rather AMRAP? Really?
I feel like, at least for me personally, I would rather set a 20-minute or 30-minute clock and just do something, right?
And so to help counterbalance that to a degree is like intervals are a great way to get
that's a good time, way for time
workout, but styles, also you're in an interval where, or AMRAP style where you know how much time they're going to be there for, but you
same concept, right?
You have times where like you can still bank in time and still do it for time, but it's just a little bit different structure, right? And we talked about intervals before. I like intervals a lot just because it allows for a good amount of work volume at higher intensities, right? Because you're going to have that work rest ratio.
It's pushing outside of that boundary that you're probably not used to, right?
Yeah, you kind of get the stretch, and you kind of stretch yourself maybe a little bit further than what you normally would otherwise if it was, you know, an AMRAP for time, right? If I have like, okay, if I have 4 minutes to do this piece and I can kind of get through it in 2 minutes and get that to the rest, I'm more willing to kind of push the effort. If it was like 5 rounds for time, where I'm going to probably back off those rounds a little bit to pace myself, so to speak.
Sure. It's probably like total opposite. Yeah.
And so that's kind of like a broad spectrum way of that. Now, when it comes to like the time domains of what we program, like how long you guys are going to work out for, well, that's another thing that we have to look at right now. You're talking about energy systems where, you know, the oxidative system, aerobic system. There's a shitload of aerobic systems, actually. I mean, CrossFit breaks down to like very like...
Anaerobic and aerobic.
Right? Yeah, aerobic oxidative. That's kind of like CrossFit's kind of terms, but there's a lot more than just that. Because you can go to like glycolytic and things like that, where you know, you have some energy systems that literally last like 10 seconds or less, right? Like a full-on sprint, right? Which has a lot of benefits to doing, but that requires like a 10-to-1 rest-to-work ratio.
Yeah.
Like 20-to-1 work-to-rest ratio. So meaning... If you want to track and ran 40 yard dashes, right? With the objective of like as high intensity as possible, you need a lot of rest to recover from those, right? Well, people aren't gonna feel like they got a workout. Well, how many people feel like they're gonna get a great workout from that, right? Where, like, okay, we're gonna get on the bike and I want you guys to sprint as hard as you possibly can for 8 seconds, and we're gonna rest for 2 minutes between each interval.
We're gonna do that 10 times.
How great does that sound as a workout? Doesn't sound very fun. Effective, not fun.
Very effective. That might be something, like you said, like you probably program for like somebody like Nick or like
individualized,
like that,
yes.
Right?
And so most people tend to enjoy the workouts that are in the 10 plus minute range, right? So once again, we're talking the balancing of what's effective and what's fun.
Sure.
Right? Because I can see a lot of workouts that are 4 or 5 minutes long, very sprinty type workouts. The common complaint about that is that they feel like they didn't do they don't feel like they had as great a workout. And there is an argument to be made there that you do have some people who can't tap into that hardcore sprint system.
Like that intensity.
That super high intense system, right? Even if you got somebody on the bike for 10 seconds and sprint as hard as you possibly could. If all they've done all their life is more slow, steady state cardio, they're going to have a very, very hard time, no strength training, have a very, very hard time tapping into that. Take somebody like Jacob Gaylor or like Seth, where they're very much fast twitch muscle recruiting type people. They're going to be able to tap into that very, very well. Like they're going to be able to go super hardcore and they're going to feel the effects of that compared to somebody who has more of a cardio or long distance, slow twitch. They're going to have a hard time tapping it. They're not going to feel the same way. And so most people don't feel like they get great workouts from doing those very short, tight pieces. So I still think they're effective in dosages. It's just doing it in a way that makes sense where it's not quite balanced in the way that aerobic system. If you kind of tag like, okay, you're hitting these hitting a different aerobic systems, right? We're definitely not hitting on those shorter ends very often, but I still try to throw them in there at least like once or twice a month, right? But most of our workouts are going to probably be between 10 to 20 being more common pieces because that allows for strength and allows for you guys to get enough sweat and feel like you burn enough calories in a workout to feel like it's an effective workout for yourself.
Well, that way they can leave here and feel like they did something.
They've checked the box and feel like, okay, that was a great workout. Because then that's the main principle,
got a good workout, that's the most important thing a lot of times.
Well,
right?
I think for people, it comes down to two things. Was it a great workout? And B, am I seeing progress? Mm-hmm. Right? I think that's the very foundation basic, that's how it comes down to. And so a 10 to 20 marker seems to be where most people feel the best, where you hear people, hey, that was a great workout, right? Then we kind of get into loadings.
Sure.
Where, okay, what kind of loading do we want this individual workout? And we kind of look at that almost a degree as a monthly scale where we don't want every time we lift heavy, it's always a deadlift.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And every time we squat, it's always a light squat. Well, we have to balance those things out where maybe one day is a light deadlift, one day is a heavy deadlift, one day is a heavy squat, one day is a light squat, one day is a moderate. Do we want, and just because it's heavy, what kind of volume do we want to include on that?
You're not going to program 200 deadlifts at 315. Like, you're just not going to do that, right?
Well, like, there's a balance there, right? You could do a workout where 21-15-9 deadlifts at 315.
Sure.
You could do that, right? Or you could do a 20-round workout that has two deadlifts at
315.
Right? Like, those are different kind of volumes at one particular time. Where now you have to balance those things out as well. And so that's another thing that we have to look at in balancing those numbers out. When it comes to rep volume, we also have to balance those things out. Do we want 50 plus reps? Do we want 20 to 40 reps? Do we want under 10 reps? Mm-hmm. Those are other things that we look at. Do we want, you know, what kind of rounds do we want? These are all things that we look at. And there's some other things as well. But once you have these things created and you put it down on paper, now you have to decide, is that an effective workout?
Yeah, well, this is now you're, at least for me, this is where I write like two or three different workouts and then I end up picking one.
Well, this is because you've hit these certain areas, right? Like, okay, well, I've hit this area, I've hit this area, I've hit this area, and you put it on paper. Well, then, if you've done CrossFit long, and if you kind of know how some of these workouts feel and go, and just because it looks a certain way and you go to visually write it down, there might be three iterations of that one individual workout until you feel like, okay, that's the workout I feel like is going to be the most effective for what we want.
Sure.
Right? That isn't always, I mean, there's been plenty of times I've written a workout that's been over-programmed or under-programmed. But I feel like, you know, 90%+ of the time I do a pretty good job of hitting that on the head for the most part. Where, is it, like I said, is that going to be an effective dose? Mm-hmm. Where you want workouts for the most part that are going to allow, I like to program workouts where it allows you to stay moving throughout most of the workout, right? I'm not the biggest fan of workouts where you have like this one extreme bottleneck
in a workout, right? Doing the same. Everybody's struggling at the same part.
Same station, right? Where if you had a workout where, like an example could be, let's say you were right a workout of, we're going to go 1,000 meters of rowing. You're going to do 80 double unders. You're going to do 60 wall balls. And then you're going to do 40 bar muscle-ups. Mm-hmm. That's a humongous bottleneck in a workout is the 40 bar muscle-ups, sure. Right? Or like at the, or you, and then you go back through it again, where I would rather create a workout where maybe it's like 20 bar muscle-ups at the end or something like that, where it's not as much of a bottleneck comparatively to the other movements, where it's still going to allow you to stay moving.
I always think about it as like specialists, right? Or like, I like to think about it as like, kind of like, this is where like, I would almost think like competition-y is like, if I were writing up a competition workout, like you're not going to just write up, and you might have like an all strength workout, but like you're going to try and structure your workouts to where like a strong guy is going to have still have a chance to catch up to a gymnastic guy in that mm-hmm. workout, right? Or vice versa, like the gymnastic guy is still going to have a chance to maybe catch the yeah. stronger guy in that workout.
Yeah, right? And that's where I like to try to balance that as best I can, each individual workout. Now, there are going to be some workouts where it's going to be a little skewed at times.
Sure.
So you're going to have a workout every once in a while where it's going to favor a bodyweight guy. You're going to have it's
going and that's just favor, going to happen.
And that's just going to happen from time to time. And it's also balancing out like monostructural movements, gymnastic movements, and weightlifting movements, right? Where you have some days where it's all weights, some days it's all bodyweight, some days it's all monostructural. You do have those components kind of involved in there, right? To kind of, once again, balance out all these things to create a most well-run fitness level as you can. You got to have those things. But for the most part, most of your workouts are going to fall in that bucket where we're hitting all those things at one time,
sure.
where it's not being skewed into one individual direction as best as possible. And so we're coming up with 56 minutes on this podcast, but there's a little bit more to that than just that as well. But you understand that where the complexity of how much this mm-hmm. can go into it, right? And I think she'd also asked like, how long does it take you to create like a, like programming wise, well,
what programming
yeah.
are you asking?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, if you're just talking about like the class programming itself, and like I kind of talked about this, like sometimes it flows out easier than others, mm-hmm. right? Just like when you're writing an essay in English.
If shit's
class.
Clicking, like shit's clicking.
Well, sometimes right? it's like, boom, just like the pen hits the paper and you're just kind of going at
yeah.
it, right? And that could be an hour and a half. Sometimes you have like, you write it down, you're like, oh, fuck, like this does not work out at all. Or you're just having a hard time getting the ideas moving that individual week. It could take me two to 3 hours, right? It just varies from week to week on what the time volume it does. But and I know touched on this as well. There's a lot of gyms out there, and I don't know what you think. A percentage of CrossFit gyms out there. How many gyms do you think write their own programming? How many outsource their programming?
Way more people outsource.
I think it's over the past like 5 years. I think it's probably.
If I had to guess, it's probably. What do you think, like 60-70%?
I mean, obviously it's hard to get exact number on that. Yeah, but eventually
that's probably
more often than not.
More than half.
Because back in the day, every gym just did their own programming.
Yeah.
Right? There was no, unless you follow like main site, there was nothing to go pay for
sure.
or go follow along with. So everybody's kind of with their own programming. But over the years, as some companies come out like Mayhem and Proven
well, a lot of these
and
bigger
even
companies are now offering it, right?
Yeah, so you pay like $150-$200 and you get programming with warm-ups and things of that nature, right? Which is a great tool for some, especially for some maybe affiliate owners who don't feel comfortable in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
they just open the box, they don't really know too much about
it. Yeah, they're not like, hey, like I don't feel comfortable with that, I don't feel confident in myself to program, to make an effective workout, I can just pay somebody else to do it and I'm done with it. And it definitely does eat up some time, a lot of energy of the week to do those things.
But there's also some people that like genuinely like enjoy programming.
Yeah.
Right?
And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of my ego or what it may be, but, you know, I feel like for us, it's my way of putting a stamp on the gym where
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, like art, like a pizzeria where, you know, this is like family owned, like this
sure.
is the family recipe of workouts where, you know, you're only going to get that here. You're not going to get that anywhere else. And so I take pride in that and I put a lot of time and effort into that. I know for some people it's very, very important. Some people could give a shit, could care less about
sure.
it. Like they could care less of it. If it's CrossFit Mayhem program, they don't care about any of that stuff. But it's a way for us to put our own recipe and own fitness in the way we view fitness and create as much of a well-balanced program that I see feasible fit. Because I feel like even with CrossFit, there's a lot of holes that are in the CrossFit programming
mm-hmm.
that I try to fill in and try to build balance that out as best as I can.
Absolutely.
So, but we're about the time cap on this podcast. So.
It's one of the longer ones.
Yeah. And so hopefully you guys got something out of this. like I said, this could be a whole podcast itself. For could probably talk on this another 20 minutes if we needed to.
Probably go like another hour if you really wanted to.
But we're going to go ahead and cap it there. So hopefully you guys got some insight into it. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And we will talk to you guys next time.
See ya.